Welcome to the wonderful podcast, Yoga Beyond the Asana. I am Wanda Batwal. Together, we explore the fascinating world of yoga, spirituality, and personal development. We hear and we learn how we can integrate more love, balance, and fulfillment into our daily lives. Thank you for being here. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Yoga Beyond the Asana, the wonderful podcast. I'm so glad that you're here. As you notice, I'm speaking English, and it has been a while that we have had an English-speaking guest on the show, and it feels really refreshing, actually, to be back to English. And I'm super happy and excited for today's guest. It's my dear and beloved friend, Jessica Moltini. I give you a little bit of a background story of Jessica and me and how we met, so you have a little vivid idea. So Jessica and me, we met 5-6 years ago back in Bali, where we both used to live. And we shared many beautiful experiences together, hard experience, hard times, challenging times, crying together over heartbreaks, chanting mantra together, dancing, celebrating, having lots of coffee, reading tarot cards together, and we sat with a guru in India. So we share a lot of experiences and memories, and I'm so glad we're still friends until today. Jessica's back in Brazil now. India was also the place where Jessica discovered her purpose, now what we call in yoga Dharma. Jessica Moltini is a mindfulness facilitator and designer. She's trained at UCLA as a mindfulness facilitator and a certified professional mindfulness teacher through IMTA. She offers classes and workshops on the foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness to awaken the feminine wisdom, trauma, and neuro self-regulation skills. She loves integrating nourishing practices with practical skills for self-empowerment, resilience, balance, and joy. I am so happy to talk with Jessica today about her personal path, her major shifting points in her life that brought her to this moment today, where she is a mindfulness facilitator, designer, and we will talk about what mindfulness actually is. It's a very often heard word in the modern day society. We hear it very often. In German, it's Achtsamkeit. So we will talk about this practice and how we can actually benefit from this practice, how we can practice more mindfulness in our everyday life. Jessica will guide us through a beautiful meditation. And now I'm super excited to start into the conversation with her. Welcome, Jessica.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Wanda. Even though we are far away from each other, I'm in Brazil, you're in Germany. Technology is amazing. It's amazing too for us to go beyond the physical distance. And we had amazing experiences in Bali, which made our friendship stronger. And it's just beautiful to see your journey. And it's a pleasure to be here with your followers, with your community, and sharing something that I'm completely passionate about it, which is mindfulness, transformed my life. And it's the purpose of my life as well. I'm very excited to get into it with you.
I think it's so special. Maybe our listeners can relate to it. If you have a friend and you went through some very special time together as we had, and to see each other grow and develop. And it's such a pleasure today that we sit here. And I'm allowed to say it. I'm so proud of you, how far you've come, which path you took. And I'm so excited also that my followers, my friends, my students get to know you now here. So Jessica, the first question I want to ask you, and I like to ask every guest actually, is what moves you right now?
What moves me right now? Wow, that's a very interesting question. I feel what really moves me right now, it's purpose. It's a connect, you know, true mindfulness, true space and silence, really create a space to listen what inspires me in this very moment. And that moves me, you know, that moves me a lot. And definitely beauty and mindfulness has a huge play in my decisions and the things I work on, the things I create. And I'm a designer, as you mentioned before. So that's why I mentioned beauty, because I feel that really moves me. I love beautiful things. I love creating. I love inspiring, you know, everything that inspires me, I want to share with other people. So through this space of silence, this inspiration overflows and moves me.
Beautiful. Thank you. Can you take us back into your life a little bit, onto your personal journey? Because I guess you were not born as a mindfulness facilitator, right? So there, something usually happens in our life before we go onto the inner path. And I know a little bit about your history. I think you worked at a bank. So very different life today now. So can you please take us a little bit onto your personal journey? What were major shifting points for you where you changed your life?
Yeah, sure. I love talking about this because it's a reflection for myself as well to notice all the changes that happened in my life and also honor those, especially right now that I'm in my hometown where I grew up. I grew up in Brazil, in São Paulo, which is one of the biggest cities in the world.
Wow, how many people live there?
17 million.
17 million?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think it's a lot of people.
Wow, that's huge.
It's huge. And I grew up in this mindset, which is very much similar to New York City, where, you know, people want to make money and have successful careers and, have like status and power. And being raised in a city where those values are so strong, I grew up believing that I should do the same, that I should, you know, have a career, a great job where I could make a lot of money. I started studying psychology, and I got a job in a bank. And my life was going really great. I was making great money. I was I was studying psychology. I had a relationship with a guy that I was passionate about it. I had friends. I have a lot of financial security as well. But I was feeling so empty. I was feeling so empty. That's the word that comes for me. I would look around to other people around me, my friends and family, and I would see them like, wow, they are so sure about what they want in their life and they are so happy and successful. And I was feeling broken. For some reason, I felt like I wasn't doing what I want to do. I didn't have a sense of purpose. Even though I chose to work in that place and study psychology, I was really disconnected from myself. And I would compare myself to everyone that I would see, thinking that they were happy, thinking that they were fulfilled. And that was really real for me in that moment. The comparison was very strong, and the comparison made me feel not belonging to the life that I was living here in the city. And this disconnection that I was feeling led to some serious symptoms. I would have some panic attacks once in a while, which are so uncomfortable. Whoever had a panic attack before knows how strong it is for the body, very unsettling, very physical. I would have also some anxiety. I would have anxiety, you know, basically every week. And Those two symptoms led to a hidden depression. Very subtle, but I wouldn't recognize in that moment of my life. And this unhappiness somehow really helped me to change my life. I was really suffering. It was a very heavy suffering, but it wasn't the suffering of someone that didn't have money or, didn't have friends. It was the suffering of internal suffering, a suffering of disconnection and not knowing and not feeling belonging and fulfilled with my purpose. And the symptoms just grew over time really strongly to a point that I decided to ask for help. And I met some people here in Brazil, a community, a spiritual community, where I started doing some psychological therapy work. And that led me to a big change. After working with this community, after a couple of months, I got fired from my job and I decided to go to India and give myself space.
So you traveled to India. You've never been in India before, I guess. Did you go by yourself? Tell us a little bit about your time there and what happened then. What did you discover in giving yourself space? Because I think what you just described is actually a story that many people feel. And I myself, you know, in parts had the very same or very similar story like you, actually suffering in the soul, on the soul level, from not doing what you're actually here to do. So I think many people feel that and maybe even feel not allowed to be suffering because on the material level, they have everything, right? But there was this emptiness that you shared, that you felt inside, and that led you to this journey and this inner journey. You went to India. So what happened then when you arrived?
Yes, you said everything right now, and was confusing, you know, for me, like the question, like if I have all this, you know, that I learned to be right, I have all the money I need, I have friends, I have a relationship, why am I feeling empty? Why I'm not happy? And so going to India and creating a space meant to me just to allow myself to explore all the things that I didn't allow myself to explore, to be following the American dream, let's say like that. And I just did nothing. I just allowed myself to do nothing. So I went to India by myself. I didn't know anybody. I met some people through this spiritual community where the teacher that I was studying with, he had an ashram in Rishikesh. And so I knew him. And I heard about some people, and some friends that I made here in Brazil gave me contacts of guest house and other people that would come later on to India to the same, to be in the same ashram. And I just followed my intuition. And when I got there, I wasn't scared. I wasn't feeling, you know, I just felt very guided. And I started working as a volunteer at the ashram, which was very inspiring for me. And through the volunteer work, I started making friends, and I just created a very sweet routine for me, like waking up in the morning, doing some meditation, and then practicing yoga. I would create some space during the day to journal and write, and just give myself a space to feel what my purpose was. And without rushing, without pressuring myself, but just by enjoying that experience. And it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. It was just like being a child again, playful, fearless, curious, and open to whatever life was bringing me. And I have to say that Rishikesh is a very special place. It's like a playground. You know, it's a sacred town in northern India. And you have nice little cafes around and the river, Ganga. So it was the perfect place to explore.
And how did you come then to find, as one of your purposes today, to actually create beautiful malas, beautiful prayer beads?
Yes. So everything started there, actually, when you've been Rishikesh, so you know exactly what I mean. And whoever also is listening today and went to Rishikesh might get a sense of it. And I really allowed myself to explore everything. So I did, as I said, meditation, yoga, journal. I was also dancing. I did a lot of dance. I gave myself the permission to explore creativity. And I met some Nepalese people there that they were designing clothes for me. I was like, okay, I want to make some clothes. And then I would buy the fabrics and bring to the Nepalese tailors, and they would help me to design the clothes. And that was really fun. And I started seeing mala beads around, and I felt in love with this necklace. I was like, wow, I want to buy all of them. And I started like collecting some of my favorite mala beads. And in the ashram, by coincidence, I started volunteer at the shop selling books and mala beads. And when I saw people buying the mala beads, I was like, you know what? I could make something nicer. Mm-hmm. I just felt like, you know, I can make something very beautiful for our generation that has beauty and design involved in a spiritual object that support us in our meditation practice. So I was combining something that really was helping me that moment to understand who I am, to understand my essence, which is meditation, together with an object that supports us in our practice, which is the mala beads. So my designing journey started right there, volunteering and just, you know, allowing myself to be creative.
Yeah, and I think you do a wonderful job. I honestly have to say I've seen so many malas around the world, you know, if it's in India or in Bali, there are like, and everyone who has been there knows there's like tons, you know, tons of jewelry, tons of stuff, but also a lot of, you know, fake stuff, fake stones. And so I think your malas are especially beautiful. We are also wearing them right now. And, you know, I became a total fan of your art, your designs. And so for everyone listening who has no idea what we're actually talking about, like, can you just sum up briefly what is a mala and how can we actually practice with this? How can it be of benefit also in our meditation?
Sure. So mala beads are a set of beads that they are used in many different traditions. We think it's just like Hinduism, but they are actually, you can see them in Christianism as the rosary. You see at Buddhism as a mala as well. And at the Islam, I don't remember exactly the name, but they also have. And they are designed with, in Hinduism, the malas that I design, they have a specific number of beads, which are 108. And in the Vedic tradition, this number represents the number that is infinite divisible. So it's like represents the creation and the infinite possibilities of creation. So it's a mystic number. And when we combine this beautiful beads, which, you know, the mala beads can be made with crystals and also with rudraksha, which is a seed that is originally from Asia. You can find them specifically in India and also in Indonesia. And the rudraksha seed has a calming property that is also used in Ayurveda to calm the body. They use as a food, as a powder, and helps with heart diseases and other things as well. So combining the crystals, which also have a healing property, together with the rudraksha, they are, you know, a very powerful spiritual necklace. And traditionally, in those cultures, we use the mala beads to focus our attention by counting each bead as a number. For example, we are seated in meditation. We take our mala beads on our hands and we count each bead as using a mantra. For example, Om Namah Shivaya, one after another until the necklace is, you know, all the beads are counted. Or we can count a number, 1, 2, 3, or an affirmation, I am enough. And by repeating this chanting, this counting, or those mantras, we focus our attention in this, action, in an object. And by doing that, we are practicing meditation and help us to be present in the moment. It's a very devotional practice. And they say as well that is a way of purifying our hearts and mind.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. So now, can you tell us, like, I guess or I assume that just working with the mala, practicing meditation, either with a mantra, with an affirmation, with a breath, is already itself a kind of mindfulness practice. So, or how did you then find the way from meditating with the mala, starting to produce malas in Bali? So maybe you can, take us with you how this led into something else.
Yeah, it was interesting, Lena, because as I was exploring my own practice, I started to feel very curious and passionate about the Asian lifestyle. So from India, being with that culture, seeing how they live, integrating those practices into their daily life, I started to fall in love with that culture, and I decided to find a base in Asia, and it was in Bali. And Bali, as you know really well because you live there, it's a place where it's very inspiring, it's very creative, and was the perfect environment for me to start exploring the designing of those objects. And as well, in Bali, they have a very beautiful spiritual practice with a lot of, where they integrate a lot of offering, a lot of prayers. They also use the mala beads in their practices. And I felt like I want to breathe this every day. I want to experience in my veins this lifestyle, because that was what I was looking for here in the city. And I wasn't finding anywhere else. And I felt a huge sense of purpose and beauty and meaning that was lacking in my life. So that, you know, emptiness that I was feeling back here went away. And I felt like a huge feeling of fulfillment and belonging. So I also had the opportunity to travel to Japan and see how was the Buddhism there. And I did some Zen meditation training. I went to Vietnam. I went to many other countries in Asia, and I'm very interested in anthropology and also understand people's lifestyle in Asia, where they include those rituals into their daily lives. And I started seeing like, okay, so it's possible to have a life where we combine our modern lifestyle together with meaning and ritual. And I started studying deeply, the practices. But as you know, in Asia, it's very intuitive. Of course, we have like a really old history of study, 5,000 years of yoga and meditation and Ayurveda medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. But it's still, it's very intuitive. And I found that I really wanted to study more meditation. And I felt this calling to study in a way that is more scientific and could give me a different perspective from the intuitive side. So that's why mindfulness came to my life. And UCLA, which is a very respected university in the States, they have one of the best mindfulness program in the world. And I found that, you know, when I found out that they had a mindfulness awareness research center there, I just got so excited. I was like, I can't believe this turned into a serious field of study and that they are doing research around the benefits of mindfulness together with American communities and different situations and setting. And as soon as I heard about this program, I signed up for it. And it has been an incredible journey to integrate, both experiences, the intuitive, emotional, the intuitive experience to scientific experience as well.
Yeah, wow. Thank you. I'm really excited to go a little bit deeper into this. But before we do this, let's clarify this term mindfulness for everyone. So in German, it's Achtsamkeit. And maybe you could tell us about the importance of mindfulness also in relation to meditation, Buddhism, and where can we find mindfulness? How can we practice it? Only meditation or in our everyday life? So maybe you can define this word for us first.
Sure, you can. Mindfulness is a ancient practice. It came from Buddhism for sure. We have I love honoring the roots and where this practice comes from, and I think it's very important. But the importance of mindfulness, why so cool? It's because we don't need to have any religion to practice. It's they call it as a secular practice, which means that it's open for everyone from all genders, all religions or non-religious people. And it's a contemplative practice that we can find in many, many cultures and tribes as well, not only in religious practices, but the contemplative practices, they were practices that indigenous people also used to have. And you will hear many different definitions about mindfulness, what mindfulness actually is. And I like to share from my own experience and what mindfulness is for me.
Yes, please.
And for me, mindfulness is our ability, our capacity to be present with the experiences that we are having in this very moment with openness and curiosity, which means if we look to a child and we see the child playing are eating, the child is fully immersed in that experience. If you try to talk to a child, she will look, or he will look at you like, it will not give you any attention because the child is fully there experiencing that moment. And all of us, we had this capacity when we were a child. We all had the ability to be present. But because we were conditioned by society, by education, and by our parents, we stop using this area of our brain that is about being present, which is our the right hemisphere of our brain. So we grew up learning that we needed to work, we need to think, we have to be very analytical. So we are training a lot one area of our brain. It's like a muscle when we go to the gym and we want to, you know, okay, I'm going to just work out on my arms. And then you forget to work out your legs. You come out of, after some months, your arms get super strong, but you have very skinny legs. And that is very, you know, not balanced. And that's what is working in our humanity. It's what is happening in humanity right now. We are making one side of our brain very, very strong, which is about survival. Imagine that we've been going through this evolutionary process for many, many years, coming from the animals, and we developed a very good skill in surviving, in protecting ourselves, in thinking. Everything we do, all this, the worries we have, if we look deeply, comes from survival need. But it's not serving our humanity anymore, because if we look around, it's creating a lot of separation, a lot of suffering internally. It's not sustainable. We are going against our nature. We are, you know, passing across ourselves and feeling this huge sense of connection and suffering. So mindfulness, it's the training of our brain to get skilled in this other hemisphere, which is related to being. So that's what mindfulness is for me. It's a practice that allows ourselves to be present with our experiences, and we are integrating one hemisphere to another so we can actually be integrated human beings.
So what you're saying is we can actually practice mindfulness in every moment, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And it's what I love about this practice is that it's something that is a practice that can happen every moment. We don't need to step onto a yoga mat or sit in silence, but actually we can practice it now, right? How present we are listening to this podcast, or are doing, or are we doing 100 other things on the side, or how present are we here together, listening to each other, talking to each other? So could we do a little mindfulness practice right now together? Something we can do right now?
For sure. And thank you for saying that, Wanda. It was a great, very complimentary comment, which many times, just to take this hook and not forget to mention, many times we think that meditation is only seated meditation. But there, as you said, there are many ways that we can actually practice being present. It can be eating, walking, having a conversation with somebody, listening to the podcast, for example, and taking each opportunity of this very, very moment just to be present. And the more we do it, the better we get at it. It's like playing an instrument. And yes, I would love to offer a practice. So it's going to be one of the foundational practices that I do for myself and for my students. And we begin by finding a comfortable posture. Mm-hmm. It can be seated in a meditation cushion, in a chair, in your bed, couch, or even lying down if you have any back or knee injury. What is important here is that you feel comfortable honoring your body. We're going to place our hands on our thighs, knees are touching each other, whatever works for you. You can close your eyes or leave it open if it's safer for you. If you choose to be with your eyes open, you can just have a soft gaze looking to a fixed point in front of you or on the floor. We're gonna just take a breath or two here in your own time. Just notice how you're feeling right now after listening to this podcast, to this conversation. Noticing your body. And I want to invite you to bring your attention to your feet or legs. Noticing your feet or legs connected to the ground, to the earth beneath you. Feeling the support. Feeling held by earth. And just noticing the ground. There is any texture of your legs or feet in touch with the ground. Any temperature. Let me just create a space here to notice. We don't need to create any story, but we just allow ourselves to be present. Now we bring our attention to our hands in touch with our knees, thighs, or in touch with each other. Noticing the temperature of our hands. There is any texture, sensations like tingling, itching. Just pay attention to what calls your attention right now in this very moment. Now I want to invite you to focus your attention on your breath. In mindfulness, the breath is our anchor that helps us to focus our attention. And we just see how our body breathes. Maybe your body breathes by noticing the rising and falling of your chest or abdomen. Or maybe it's the temperature of the air entering your nostrils or mouth. The air entering your lungs cool and leaving your lungs warm. You can experiment here and see which way your body breathes in a way that is easy, natural for you. You can place a hand on your chest or abdomen if it's difficult for you to notice your breath. And we're going to create a space here to be 1 minute practicing the mindfulness of our breath, just being present with it. One breath after another. When one breath ends, another breath begins. You can even say mentally, breathing in and breathing out. Breathing in and breathing out. So let's begin this 1 minute. And whenever the time is over, I will guide you to the next step of this meditation. So let's begin. Okay, just take a deep breath in and a deep breath out. And just notice how you're feeling right now after practicing a little bit of mindfulness. Noticing your body, noticing how you're feeling. Just creating a space here to observe what is. And now we're going to bring our attention to our feet, connected to the ground, noticing our feet. And now bringing our attention to notice our hands. And we bring this meditation session to a close by moving our fingers and toes, giving a stretch if that feels good for you. And whenever you're ready, you can open your eyes. And I hope you enjoyed. How was that for you, Wanda?
Very much. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you so much. Yeah, I feel super relaxed now and very calm, very home, very beautiful. I have a few more questions around mindfulness. So what would you say brought mindfulness to your life, mindfulness meditation, mindfulness practice in everyday life? And how would you, Jessica, be different if you wouldn't have found the tools of meditation and mindfulness today? So yeah, just as a contrast for us to know, what effects did mindfulness practice have on your life so far?
Hi, Wanda. I have to say that if I didn't have this practice in my life, I definitely would be suffering. I would be stuck in the same spot as I was when I was working at the bank, suffering with anxiety, panic attacks, and depression. I was very fortunate to be introduced to this practice, and it was so transformative, and it still is so transformative to, you know, bring a sense of quality, ease, and peace to my daily life. And I notice when I don't practice meditation every day, which now is part of my mind hygiene, is how I call it. It's like brushing my teeth and having a shower and eating. It's definitely my mind hygiene. And when I don't do it, I see that I become very reactive to situations. If I get a message from somebody being a little bit more, you know, triggering, I, instead of act consciously, I react, which is very different. And doesn't matter if I'm, you know, practicing this for over 7 years. I'm a human and I have, you know, my human qualities and defects as well. I'm not perfect and I make mistakes. And that's why I practice mindfulness, because it helps me to become a better human being every day. And I want to practice daily because, you know, I relate to people better. In the end, I relate to myself better. I'm more compassionate towards me, and being more compassionate towards myself, I can also be more compassionate towards others. So I see that it's not only for my individual benefit, but when we start practicing more and more, it becomes kind of a social responsibility. There is a huge social impact, and it's very inspiring.
So what do you think would happen if the whole world would practice mindfulness, and how would that affect our world and our coexistence? You think it's a solution?
Yeah, I believe it's possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the mission of mindfulness, at least for myself and for my mentors and neuroscientists that I've been studying through UCLA. We believe that we are in an integration process of the pretty much focused on the I.
Can you say the last sentence again? Because I think the connection was not stable.
Sure. Sorry about that.
So you said you believe in.
Yeah, I believe it's possible. And it's what we've been studying at UCLA together with my mentors and neuroscientists. The Diana Winston, the founder of MARC, and also Dan Siegel, the neuroscientist that also is part of MARC. And we believe we are in an integration process of our human brain, which, as I mentioned before, we developed our one side of our brain, which is very much connected to the I. My needs, what I want. And when we start practicing mindfulness, it's not so much I, but there is a we there. So we are moving with mindfulness. I believe we are integrating the me, we. It's not just about us, but it's about community. And when we start creating awareness about ourselves and have more compassion and kindness towards ourselves, we can definitely extend that to our others. And I see that there is a huge potential in transforming our world when we are more, you know, present, loving, kind, and compassionate towards each other. So yeah, I think it's possible.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah, much research, as you also mentioned, has recently been carried out into mindfulness in neuroscience. For example, what are scientific findings related to mindfulness and how they can help our modern day diseases? You know, how it can help all the challenges we face and like anxiety, depression, ADHD, stress, all this modern day lifestyle, diseases and imbalances we are facing. So maybe you can speak a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, I'm very curious about the benefits of the practice. And I just want to, you know, be very transparent. I'm not a scientist, so I cannot talk really, really properly about it. But I love reading these studies. I do it often and it's fascinating. And has been proven by UCLA, Brown University, and a lot of other universities, especially in UK and States, that mindfulness meditation, it's very beneficial to reduce anxiety, depression, insomnia, stress, because we are doing a brain training, focusing our attention on the in a present moment experience, which can be focusing our attention on the breath or on the sounds or in our physical sensations. We are making one area of our brain, which is when we are thinking about, you know, worry or planning or working, we activate a lot of one area of our brain. So this area of our brain gets really fired up. And when that gets really fired up, our body releases by stress and survival instincts, releases a lot of hormones that are toxins for our bloodstream. So when we release a toxin, which is called cortisol, the level of stress, but as well of inflammation of our body gets really high. So when we practice mindfulness meditation, we are focusing our attention in a present moment experience. So we're going to activate another area of our brain. And this area that was activated by worry, by stress, it starts to lessen. And by lessen this activation, because we are doing something else, we stop releasing cortisol. We stop releasing the hormones that are toxic for our blood. And we increase the release of other hormones that are actually good for us. Endorphin, serotonin. So we improve our immunity by practicing mindfulness, which is really amazing. There is a lot of research showing that a lot of diseases recovery speeds up when people include mindfulness meditation into the treatment by, you know, many like months of healing process that gets speeded up. And it's basically deactivating the activation of some neurons that are connected to worry thinking and activating other ones that are actually beneficial for us. So we are just shifting our perspective. Instead of focusing on worry, we are focusing on being present. And that is really a huge shift for our mental health and also for our physical health. And I feel, especially now that we are going through a health global crisis with COVID, this law in mindfulness has been crucial for our health, not only mental health, but also for the to strengthen our immune system, which we think that, you know, we just do that by going to the doctor or taking vitamins, but actually stress is one of the main reasons why we get sick.
Right. So could you tell us if you, because I think it's really important, as you also mentioned before, to have someone who guides you into mindfulness, someone who helps you to practice it and to know how you do it. And what are some practices, simple practices you do during the day? Do you walk especially slow when you go, I don't know, shopping? Or what are some very simple practices you integrate into your everyday life and people can also practice?
Sure. There is a book that I highly recommend. It's called Training a Wild Elephant, which has really beautiful, easy daily practices that we can integrate to our daily life. And one of them that I do often, it's, for example, 1 week I do brushing my teeth with mindfulness. So I do it, I look to the mirror, I brush my teeth, I really feel the texture of the toothpaste and feelings that I have in my mouth. So that's really easy because we do it every day in the morning and at night at least. And we just have to remember to do it. The mindfulness practice, the main challenging is to remember to do it. And I also love doing the eating meditation. So when I'm about to have my breakfast, especially in the morning, I take my morning very slow. I sit down, I have my cup of tea, and I enjoy the taste of my tea, the warmth, how that feels in my body. I take the first bite of my food, and I feel the texture, the flavors, how it feels in my body. Exactly what we did here with the breath, but with the food or the drink I'm having. So that's two practices that I love doing besides my meditation seated practice. And as well, movement, body movement practices, just like moving my body like a dance, but just feeling, my body with a lot of awareness, with a lot of presence, and allowing my body to make the movements that he wants. And that feels really, really nice. Do you have one, Wanda, or many?
A mindfulness practice. Well, my meditation practice for sure. And definitely the eating, the prayer. So I usually always pray before having food, slowing down, closing the eyes. And definitely also when we walk with the dogs in nature, I try to be especially, no phone, to be very present, to really feel, the temperature, to feel the quality of the light, to, the quality of the air I'm breathing. So I think it's something that's, definitely, yoga is a mindfulness practice if you do it right. So
absolutely.
Body, and the way I teach is very mindful. It's very, it's always an integration with the breath. So we don't rush through the asanas, I think many styles of yoga are way too fast. It's no mindfulness practice. You cannot be aware of the breath because the movement is way too fast. And I think that's missing the whole point of yoga. So yeah, so I think definitely my yoga practice, the asana practice, the pranayama, my mantra meditation, walking through nature, eating. So these are some mindfulness practices I definitely do. But I also think what is really important to mention also is that it really requires to slow down the whole pace of your life. And in order to practice mindfulness, and that's the whole thing that I think we're suffering under as humanity, is that our life has become so crazy fast. It's like light speed. And that's something I'm also, suffering from, that sometimes I just do a lot, and that means I also have to do things fast. So sometimes I'm really missing to be able to, my mornings are also usually quite slow. That's the advantage of being a self-employed or an entrepreneur, to, have your own timings, but still I have some deadlines and, you know, I have to get things done in a certain amount of time. And that sometimes I wish I would have a little bit more spaciousness between the things, you know, in order to be even more mindful.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because, you know, even though I'm a mindfulness facilitator, you know, I work and I'm an entrepreneur as well, with my brand, with Meiso and with my teaching. And that happens as well with me, where, you know, I get overwhelmed with a lot of work. And that's why we practice. That's why we practice yoga. That's why we practice mindfulness, because we are humans and we all go through challenges and we are not perfect. And we are, you know, lucky that we found this knowledge, that we found those tools that can support us to live with more grace in the middle of so much information and so much work in a time that has been incredibly challenging. And and have a regular practice, actually, it's support us to go through the challenges of life, to go through the real life. And yes. And I think to have a regular practice, to learn the foundations, and to have, you know, a way that we can actually commit, I think in the very beginning is really important to have a teacher that can, you know, support you, inspire you, and you can actually commit to have a regular practice. And then from there, once you commit, you can continue practicing with the teacher or by yourself, whatever is the calling.
Yeah. And also something, I think what I wanted to mention is that, because sometimes I think mindfulness, we think about, you know, being aware of the breath or scanning our body, but mindfulness is also how we talk to each other, right? Right now. And that's when you just asked me, I was just reflecting. I was like, wow, that's actually something I think I practice a lot of mindfulness in, is how and what I say. Not all the time, but I really try to be very mindful with my words. Also, you know, very mindful communication with my partner. That's something that's really important for me. And that mindfulness actually has so many aspects in our lives, right? And how we observe our thoughts, how mindful we are, what you said before, how we react, if we react or if we act out of a conscious decision. And that's something I really love about mindfulness, that it's something that can, yeah, it can be really practiced in every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely, Wanda. And there are many, the more people get familiar with the basics of mindfulness, you're gonna start to notice that there is relational mindfulness, which is what you just said. It's about being present in our relationships with each other. There is the mindful parenting that is for parents, which is beautiful. It's bringing mindfulness to, you know, how we raise our child and in collaboration with our partner, with the co-creator.
Sounds amazing. Do you have also a book recommendation there? I think many are curious.
I don't have it right now out of my head, but I know Thich Nhat Hanh, he has retreats for parents in his retreat center, which is Plum Village. But I definitely can look around and share some resources with you later on, and you can provide to your followers.
Yeah, that's super sweet.
Thank you. We have mindfulness in corporations, which is really amazing, bringing mindfulness to the corporate setting, the way how we relate to our coworkers. We have mindful eating for people that have food disorders. So there is a lot of mindfulness that can be explored. One that I love working with, it's mindfulness for self-empowerment and mindfulness for the feminine wisdom. And that's the two that I've been dedicating my time you know, since last year, and has been really beautiful.
I'm so curious to learn more. And my dear friends out there, now it comes our announcement. So yeah, you were speaking about mindfulness, meditation for self-empowerment, and that's actually the title of your workshop, of your upcoming workshop. So I'm super excited. Jessica will lead a workshop, a mindfulness meditation workshop over 2 days. It's in total, it's 4 hours. At Rose of Fire at our online studio on the 20th and 21st of February, right? Can you tell us a little bit about what's going to happen in this workshop? For who is the workshop? What are they going to learn?
Yeah, I'm so excited, Wanda, about this workshop. Firstly, because I'm your fan. I'm super proud of you for everything that you created. In the pandemic, you just launched an online studio, and this is amazing. I'm super inspired by you. And for me, mindfulness really empowered me to be myself and really honor all parts of myself, the good parts, the bad parts, and just embrace whatever is rising up in this very moment. It can be beauty, it can be challenge, it can be my humanness as well, but the good parts of Jessica as well. And what I want to share in this workshop is tools to empower people to create their own practice. Somehow we think that mindfulness and meditation, it's a recipe that we have to follow, like follow a guided meditation, which can be very beneficial as well, especially in the beginning. But what I want to do is empower people to find the best way for them to practice. It's going to be very individual, and we're going to create space to listen to ourselves first and see what do we need right now to practice in a way that is comfortable, that is honoring, that is respectful with myself. And from there, create a space where we can actually honor and own it as well, who we are, and empower ourselves to be who we are. So that's the purpose of this workshop. And we're going to learn the basic tools of mindfulness.
Hello again. I think you were just gone for a second.
Hello. Did you hear the end?
Say the last sentence again. Better.
Yeah, and we're gonna learn the foundations of mindfulness, and from there we're gonna explore how we can empower ourselves through mindfulness.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I really definitely going to take part in the workshop. I'm really excited. The workshop. So for everyone listening, the workshop will be 4 hours in total. It will be 2 hours on the 20th. It's a Saturday, and on the 21st, it's a Sunday. So everyone can take part. And all the information you will find on my on the website of Rose of Fire. And on Everspot. And for everyone who is listening to this podcast episode at a later point of time, like after February, after the date, don't worry, you can still take part in the workshop. So we will record it, and you will be still able to purchase the mindfulness meditation course at a later point of time. Yeah, so don't worry, and you will find, I will put everything, all the notes and the link in the show notes. So if you want to take part, you just have to follow the link in the show notes. And also we will put book recommendations of Jessica about mindfulness practices, the books you mentioned about the taming the elephant or something. Training the elephant. Yeah. Taming would be also good. Yeah. into the show notes. And yeah, I'm really excited about the workshop. And Jessica, also something I want to say on this point in time, I'm really, really excited because Jessica and me, we also have another collaboration coming up where we will have a mala collection together, right?
I'm so excited about this, Wanda. It's coming up so beautiful, and I can't wait to share with you and all your followers and students. You're gonna be able to practice meditation using mala beads,
right?
And designed by us together.
Collaboration.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is that we bless the malas in a beautiful ceremony in Bali, so it comes with this a very special protection intention from the priest there. So it's a special one.
Yeah, it's very special. And so as you just mentioned, all the malas will be imported from Bali. So it's also something, and I'm actually very touched by this and announcing it right now, because it's something that we create together and actually a dream coming true. I really remember me sitting in a cafe with you and I said, one day, we're going to do something together, maybe a mala collection, something together. I would love that. And, you know, some things take time, but I'm pretty sure I put the seed into the soil back then. And I'm so excited, you know, it's now flourishing and, you know, our second home, Bali, you know, where everything started, our friendship started, our connection started. And now we create this malas in Bali. And we will sell them through the online shop, the Rose of Fire online shop. I'm really, really excited. They will be out, I think, in summer 2021. Around summertime, they will be available. And they will actually come out with my new book. So they are actually related to the book. I haven't said yet what the book is about. So I'm not going to say what the mala collection will be about. But what I can say is...
Surprise!
It's a big surprise, but what I can say is they will be super beautiful and very, very helpful for your meditation, for your mindfulness practice, and just also as a beautiful tool, also as a jewelry piece, something you want to wear, something you want to work with in your personal practices. So I'm super, super excited for this too. Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jessica.
It's an honor.
So what did you say?
No, I wanted to say it's an honor to be co-creating so many beautiful things with you. As you mentioned before, we were planting seeds, dreaming about in Bali, you know, about many possibilities. And now we are here, you know, at this point of our lives where we grew, learned, studied, and it feels just like it's the perfect timing for us to co-create that. So thank you so much for the beauty and for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, love. And thank you so much for this conversation. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. And I have one final last question to sum it all up. So if you could give a speech in front of humanity and you would tell some things you would like to tell, like something you've learned and you want humanity to know, or something you want people to know that you think is really important, or a practice you think people really should do, if that would be, you can say one thing or also three things, something that comes spontaneously to mind. It's so a huge one.
It's a big one. I felt so emotional. I would say that presence is love. When we are, for example, with our parents, and they are really present with us, we feel the love. And when we are present with ourselves, we are giving ourselves love. And whatever we do with presence, we are doing that with love. and we don't need it to wait somebody to give presence to ourselves. We don't need it to ask for permission. We just needed to remember to do something that is already inside of us. All of us. We all born with the ability to be present. And through love and presence, we can heal and overcome our suffering.
Thank you so much. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you again so much, Jessica, for your time and your wisdom and your work and your being. And I'm really looking forward to your workshop, and really please everyone come. Gift yourself this benefits of this beautiful practice that can really change your life. And I'm really looking forward to this workshop, to collaborate with you, Jessica, to our collection and everything that's going to come. Thank you so much. I love you.
Thank you, Wanda. Besides all these amazing things you create with your yoga, with your beauty, with your play mantras, kirtans, books, you're also an amazing woman and such a dear friend to me. Thank you for everything. And I'm excited to see some faces on the workshop.
So yes, I hope me too. To see you. I love you. Thank you so much.
Love you.
Bye. And bye, everyone who is listening. Thank you so much for your time. It was a little bit of a longer episode today, but I really hope you enjoy it. You took a lot of inspiration from this, and I would love to hear you, see you somewhere around, maybe on the workshop or maybe next week on the next episode. And please, if you love this episode, share it with your friends. Leave a review on Apple iTunes. I would really appreciate that. Thank you so much for listening and for your support. Lots of love to you, and namaste.